Yes, Mr. Dennis Banks. We'll play a little bit more of that in a few minutes. We do have Robert Satyakam online. How you doing? Are you?
I'm doing well, brother. Coming off the big Seahawk win, so I'm ramped up and ready to go.
All right. So, Well, I'll give you a little chance to introduce yourself, and hopefully, Robert Upham will be joining us. And but till then, can we talk a little bit? We'll give you a chance to, you know, introduce yourself, and we'll talk a little bit about American Indian Lobby Day. It's coming up soon.
It is coming up soon. for your listeners, my name is Robert Satyakam. I'm a citizen of the Jolliffe Tribe of Indians in Tacoma. My father is the late Chief Robert Bob Satyakam. My mother, Suzanne Eads, and it's coming up on us fast this Friday, coming up the Native American Indian Lobby Day, the fifth annual one, and it's looking to be to one of the hugest ones. We're getting a lot of input and a lot of response from the community and from Indian country, and it's up to me to be prepared and get people some work to do while we're down there. I was down there just the other day checking in with everybody and getting the lay of the land, talking with a handful of legislators and seeing what's on deck and what's happening out there in Indian country. Not a lot of bills yet. There's one that's caught my eye, House Bill 1280, and that's sort of something I think all of us can be a part of and really sink our teeth into on Friday. And that's the creation of a commission. They have the Centennial Accord, and then they had like the revamping of it or whatever it was. 98?
Yeah, 25 years.
Yeah, and then so they want to have an ongoing commission that works with the issues, and that's regards to House Bill 1280, and each tribe, one of the 29 tribes, federally recognized tribes of Washington State, will have the opportunity to have somebody represent them in their issues and at the commission. And so it's it's a sovereignty issue, and it's from government to government sort of bill, and so we're keeping our eye on that one, Brian.
From nation to nation, folks, let's make sure that we get that right. Nation to nation, they are nation, Native people, nation.
Yeah,
and so a lot of misunderstood with that, you know, that about when the sovereignty you're talking about, and more that I. The more I sat and I listened to our elders, the more, you know, like, it's nation to nation, and they've all said it from time and time again, and but America has to understand that there were people here long before America became America.
Yeah, huh?
And they're still here, and we need to hear their voices. And so I think it's very important for people to be down at that building. I know myself, it took me a little bit of time, Robert, because whenever I walk in there, I know that was a village site. And my body kind of feels weird, you know, because I know that there were people that died for that building to be put up there.
Right. And so, and removed
yeah,
from that area for that to be built, too, you know.
Yeah. So that's a part of that story that we need to be present to tell. You know, it's
right.
I think it's really important for folks to realize that. And this is what I think is remarkable, what you and Liz have been doing, is that for as long as the nation has been here, for a couple of years, you know, barely 500, there was nations before here, and the nations that were here, they conducted themselves, and they always had a strong voice. So we have to continue to be a strong voice and understand that we need to be heard. And I mean, this stuff, you know, 5 years ago, there was never Native voices there. It's really hard to believe. And we do have Robert Upham on the line with us, too, and we'll say hello to him and give him a chance in a little bit. But I wanted to... Hi, Robert. Can you hear us?
Hello, Brian. Yeah,
great. So appreciate you calling in and sharing with us. And we're talking about American Indian Lobby Day at the moment, and I was just telling Robert that I'm grateful that somebody took the ball and started running with it, because there was no Lobby Day from Native people at all down there 5 years ago.
No, yeah, no, there wasn't, you know, and so it was in that effort to restore the Board of Geographic Names, which the state had abolished a few years prior due to the budget constraints. And when we started our effort to restore Native names regarding that mountain, we needed that Board of Geographic Names, and So when I was down there looking for that support, I was noticing that, at that time everybody else was having a lobby day, you know, and having their voices heard. And so I asked the gal down there, hey, so maybe I can bring this forward during our lobby day. When is ours? And she acted like she looked through the books, but there never has been a Native American in lobby day. And so I said, well, what's it take to get one going? She said, you know, well, start one, you know. And so that's what we did. We took a step forward and put our names on the paper and let's get this thing happening, you know. So like I said earlier, we'll be celebrating our fifth annual. So it's not going anywhere. It's growing, you know, and we're inviting any and all like-minded people or our relatives to come on down on Friday morning and be a part of something that's positive, be a part of something that's part of self-determination, you know, and something that when we talk about the treaties and things like that, you know, the supreme law of the land, and by being present, you know, we're holding people accountable, you know, and reinstate that we are still here, you know, and this time we're making progress and making inroads and, you know, not reacting so much as being present, you know, with our finger on the pulse. You know.
Absolutely. And speaking about voices, you know, Robert Upham has a day of celebration, our histories together, raising our hands to the contributions of Black Americans. And we know that we've all had this weaving together, the struggle. And I think about the fish wars that were happening that your dad was a part of, Robert. And but, you know, like the they walked the Poor People's March. They walked with Dr. King. They, you know, there's all these things that brought us together, and I know that Robert is working on that, and we have an event that's happening on the 14th, right, Robert?
Yeah.
Can we talk a little bit about that event?
Yeah, I don't want to take up too much time, but the reason for doing it is, you're right, because we did march. They did march with us, and there was Black people that helped us out with our movement, with the Fish and Rice. Dick Gregory came over here, Harry Belafonte, and just many others that supported us over the years. And then their contributions as far as art and culture, their music, you know, we as Natives respect the artists, the contributors to the art world. And I think we've been listening to Black music for so long, I think we should give ourselves the opportunity to tell them how appreciative we are of their contributions, whether it be through social justice, or the arts, or sport, or education. That's what the event's about. There's some instances we can share. I would like to say I appreciate what Robert Sadiakam's doing, because we got to have somebody marching to D.C., to the Capitals. We got to have people working outside of our regular paradigms, but we also need somebody working on our own paradigm, our indigenous paradigms, our indigenous institutions, our old indigenous traditions and how we live, you know. So I think both sides need to be covered, you know.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And, you know, the indigenous side really needs to be emphasis. I know for myself, if we're not at the table, it's like the Oren Lyon said, and many others, but I got him in my head because I've listened to a lot of different audio from him. You know, the day that Native nations don't participate, don't drop the tobacco, don't do the ceremonies, we're all going to be gone. You know, it's a very important part of the whole, and we have to acknowledge all of the whole. You know, and that weaving that you're talking about is very important, because Billy talked about it when he was alive. I remember him saying that him and Hank and many others walked, I guess, Martin Luther King. I wasn't here, but he came through Tumwater.
Yeah, Hank was at Martin Luther King Jr.'s funeral, walking behind the casket, the limousine with Sammy Davis Jr. and Reverend Ralph Abernathy. And I happened to be in D.C. A number of years back when Martin Luther King III was inaugurated into the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. And he had the daughter of, what's her name? Carol. Her name's Carol. I forget her last name. I'm remiss for not remembering her last name. But the Native girl, Lakota girl, said the opening prayer to this ceremony, inducting him into the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. Oh, Carol Hart's daughter, that's who it was. And I thought that was real, it hit me. It hit me really deep inside my heart that the black people would recognize our place here in the, on the land as being the indigenous people. And I know King did that, you know, he said that racism existed here before the blacks were brought over, just by the way they treated us. And so there's certain things that happen, there's stories where they're interwoven, like the Tommy Smith and John Carlos that rose their black gloved hands in the air in the 68 Olympics, that even intertwined with the indigenous movement of Mexico City. Right. There was indigenous people protesting down there and against the Olympics because of the infrastructure and the money being spent. And there was a massacre. At first it was 300 and it was 3,000. And they even contacted Tommy Smith and John Carlos and asked them to participate. So then Billy Mills, he won the gold medal in 1964. And he was trying to qualify for the 10,000 meter in the Mexico City Olympics. And he didn't qualify in the 10,000, but he was running the 5,000. And then the timer miscalculated his time, and they didn't qualify. And John Carlos and Tommy Smith, the two black gentlemen that raised their fists in the air, told Billy Mills they would support him. So there's so many ways where our struggles are interwoven, and somehow I don't think it's not visible. We don't make those things visible, you know? So on the flyer for our event, we put in things that, I put a little quote in there, that not everything is black and white, you know?
Absolutely.
It's not that clear cut. It's not just them against a polar opposite. It's everybody in between, whether it's Asians and Indian people or whatever, but sometimes the whole picture gets painted as black and white.
Right, because we've all been affected by colonialization. Everybody, just like we've talked before, that wound's deepest with Native people, but we've all been affected, and we've all been combating this energy that's here that wants to destroy us, the genocide you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. So I want to pass the torch back over to Robert Sadiakum and let him speak about his event a little more.
So, but your event is February 14th, 11 a.m. at the Muckleshoot Pentecostal Church, right?
It's 11 to 4. We have topics every hour, uh-huh. And we have a panel going on. The first topic from 11 to 12 is Hank Adams talking about art. The second hour from 12 to 1 is guest speaker Giassi Ross, who spoke on ESPN against the Redskins issue.
Yes.
And Giassi is part Blackfeet and part black, so he knows these issues well. From 1 to 2 is a panel discussion, where we'll be talking about all the issues of black Indian contributions and how they're interwoven. 2 to 3, we have social justice. Guest speakers Harriet Walden, who's the head of the program, the Mothers Against Police Brutality. It's from the Central District in Seattle, Washington. And then 3 to 4, we're going to have music.
All right. People can get a hold of you at, 206-9477101?
Yeah, 206-9477101. Or the email is harlem_indian_revolution@yahoo.com.
All right. That's great. I appreciate you sharing that with us all.
Thank you.
Yeah. You could still hang on if you'd like.
Hang on and call. Right. Push my button when you're ready. I'll share a few more things.
All right, cool. And Robert, are you still with us?
Yeah, I'm still with you.
Yeah, all right. So,
Robert, man, the Harlem Indians always got something good going on.
Doesn't he?
Proactive going on, you know?
Yeah, he's amazing. I just feel... We always talk, I mean, my wife, how innovative he is and how, like, he's constantly out there. And we're so grateful for that, for his voice and his sharing and great reminders of how we should be.
Yeah. You know, he's got a mind kind of like that Jossie Ross. the Harlem Indian gets it, and he provokes thought. You know, he doesn't join like the safety and numbers when it comes to issues and stuff. You know, the the taboo issues of, like, you know, the Washington Redskins, you know, and us being logos. He's got a keener insight into these, into the, I don't know, the pulse of Indian country or something like that. I just appreciate the Harlem Indian, you know, how he provokes thought and challenges us, you know, about not just agreeing with everything, but to look at things a little deeper, you know. And
absolutely.
I just love that guy's perspective, you know, and look forward to seeing him, hopefully, down there.
Right.
I'm ready for Bob to say something like, what do you want?
Yeah.
he pushed my button. Can I interject here?
Yeah, sure.
First, you're talking about this Harlem Indian. I grew up in Harlem, Montana. I grew up there in the late 60s and early 70s. And, let me say, about 8 years old, I lived in Rainier Vista in the projects in Seattle, Washington. And when the 6 Day Olympics happened, when Martin Luther King was assassinated, and the president, remember all those assassinations happening back in the late 60s, Robert Sutiakum?
Yeah.
All right. It's in our history. But anyway, we didn't get taught anything about Indians, but in our classroom when I was in second grade, there was black people's pictures all around the room. And I was fascinated. I was enjoying learning about some other kind of history besides all these, you know, the cookie cutter white issues in history, you know? I mean, I loved it. So later on, when I moved back to the reservation, when I finally got to be around a bunch of brown faces, I moved to Harlem, Montana. Our reservation is Fort Belknap Indian Reservation, home of the Grovot and the Assiniboines. And back then, Jackson 5 was a cartoon on TV. There was a Harlem Globetrotters had a cartoon. Malcolm X was prominent. So those things kind of get, because I grew up in Harlem, Montana, I had an affinity towards the Black Renaissance, I guess. You know what I mean? So then later on, when I found that the different Indian communities were polarized, whether it be the American Indian Movement or whether it be my own reservation, the Grovot struggling against the Assiniboine, because within our own communities, we struggle against ourselves. Traditionalist versus modern, you know, government Indians versus traditionalists, you know, however that goes. So then I said, I'm going to call myself so they don't lock me in any position. So I said, I'm going to call myself Harlem Indian. So even when I call myself Harlem Indians, people try to tell me there's no such thing as a Harlem Indian. So there you go. And then they think I'm black. They think I'm black. But I'm Indian. I'm not part black, but I have nieces that are part black. So that's one of my motivating factors for putting this together. I think it's important for me to provide a platform for my nieces to enter into Native American nations and be appreciated. Not for me to sit back and wonder what's going to happen to them when they enter the door. I want them to be acknowledged as members of our nation. So that's why I'm doing this.
That's awesome. And it's really important, though. I will have to just echo what Robert said. I like how you bring us to the table, all of us, and you make us think a little deeper about what's going on. And it's because, you know, of how you've looked at things and how you've always, as far as I've known you, you've always been that way. And it's really great because you're making us go, oh, there's a bigger picture to the what's going on than this little tiny dot. And it's not just the, you know, the American picture, you know, it's bigger than that. And so I'm grateful that you're there given a voice, you know, because it's important.
Brian, there are two people that in my mind that are prominent that resisted the draft in the Vietnam, around the Vietnam War. That was Muhammad Ali, and the other one was Sid Mills from Yakima. There was this book entitled Red Power, and there was a letter in there written by Sid Mills, you know, his sentiment. He wanted to stay and fight for the fishing wars on the Puyallup River and Nisqually. So he wrote a letter to the president. So I went to an anniversary celebration of Frank's Landing, and then first thing, I walked in the door with Roberto Maestas, Hank Adams, and myself, and Robert Frey was nearby. And as soon as I seen Sid, I zoomed right to him because I wanted to tell him how much I appreciated his statement saying that he had a more important war to do there rather than going over and fighting against the Asians, you know, in Vietnam. He wrote that letter, and then I said, hey, I want to ask you about the letter and tell you how much I appreciate it. He said, well, look at that guy. he's the one that wrote it. He turned around and pointed behind me, and Hank Adams was walking through the door.
Yeah.
So that's crazy. So how we help each other out, and how some people are willing to stay behind the scenes, and we all have our gifts, you know?
Yeah. Hank is just another one that's amazing. Like the stories I hear, you know, every second that I get, if I'm in a room that he's in, I'll go over and sit with him, you know, because he's just like, you know, Ramona Bennett said he's the mastermind behind it all. You know,
he does provoke a lot of stuff. He shared something with me that I share when I go talk to the Native tribal schools. It was at the Boat 40 celebration, and he shared the story about how the University of Washington Huskies' first football game ever was against Puyallup Indian Technical School, an Indian school, and the Indian school beat them up by about 30 points, 20, 30 points. That's never told, and I think that's important for our Indian kids to hear how we were prominent in certain occasions, and somehow we're always talking about our deficit, you know?
Yeah, it's so important what you just said, that, you know, our wins, that the... It's not all, you know, the side that America, I think, has really been pushing. You know, our people haven't really got up and speak, and that's why I think Lobby Day is so important to be there. And there was my old thought, you know, like I said earlier in the program, like, I know that there was something there. So myself, I've always had a hard time going in there, but I've been pushing myself to go in there, because if we're not there, nobody's going to hear anything.
Yeah.
And they're just going to continue to do what they want to do. And, like, that's why I'm so grateful for McCoy. You know, he's on watch up there, and, like, things get vetoed because he's there. You know, and I'm more appreciative as older I get to understanding this, and also understanding that there's a difference between our inherent rights that we all have and the rights that the law. You know, so we have to get back to those inherent rights. But if we're not there when they're doing this law part, we're going to lose them.
Mm-hmm. So we part of this dialogue that we'll be having has to do with a lot. There was a black caucus that had the issues with the black freemen getting the exiting or pushed away from Cherokee membership, and they made a statement to the Cherokee Nation about that. But one of the things about that is Lakotas won't accept Navajo blood, and Grovans or Arapahos won't accept Cheyenne blood. You get what I'm saying here?
Right. Go ahead.
It has nothing to do with the race. It has to do with their nationality and the system that the European colonizers put in place about blood quantum, you know?
Right. It was never here before, ever.
Mm-hmm. And then when they see us pushing one of theirs out, then they cry racism, but they need to know that we don't even accept each other. There's brothers and sisters. There was a story that Billy Frank shared when I was sitting talking with Hank Adams about his own mom. Billy Frank's mom and dad were not enrolled until they were in their 70s because I don't remember which one, but one of them was born 60 miles away from Nisqually. And the rule said you had to be born in Nisqually to be enrolled. Isn't that crazy?
I know. I listened to that interview you did with him, and that Billy Frank himself wasn't considered a native person. You know, that just blows my mind, you know, like our Nelson Mandela, you know, Billy Frank Jr.
Yeah,
you know,
Nelson Mandela, yeah.
Wasn't even considered a native person because of the government. That's just crazy. It makes me upset every time I think about it.
Nelson Mandela is my hero, too, because he sacrificed for, 30 years in prison?
Right.
And then he came out of there, and he made his move and became president. He brought people together. He wasn't about making anybody feeling guilty. He said, we're all South Africans, you know, and that's what we need to do as Indians. We don't need to have the non-Indians feel guilty, but we do need to have them recognize our histories. And when we're dealing with the histories with our black brothers, we need to acknowledge how we're going to help each other out and how we share our culture with each other, you know?
Right. Yeah. So what do you think, Rob? Are you there?
Yeah. we should go back to war and conquer them, and then we can tell our story and our history. No,
yep.
Forgot we're on the air. Sorry about that.
No, it's all right, because, you know, that is something that, you know, I was talking to my other guest last week about how America sometimes thinks that Native people were lawless people, and that's not even true. They were very lawful people, and things got taken care of. And yeah, there was, you know, it wasn't all, as my teacher says all the time, it wasn't all kumbaya. But he said, but you know, but for the most part, there was a defining peace. You know, they did have their problems, but they worked through them, and they had their own system that worked.
Speaking of kumbaya, I was asking a Native musician if he could sing some Negro spirituals, and he laughed at me. But in the Negro spirituals and the Black spiritual music, they were singing about freedom, you know what I mean?
Right.
And not being a slave. Like, the next day, they're going to fight for their freedom, and they'll go to heaven a free man. You know, that's some powerful stuff there, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
That's power. So Robert Sataiakam, when's your event?
This coming Friday, brother, on the 23rd.
It's coming right, fast. Man. It's coming fast, isn't it, Rob?
Yeah, I ran into Senator McCoy when I was down there Friday, and I was like, "Oh, you know, happy 50th anniversary, Senator." And, "Oh yeah, thank you much." And I was like, "Doesn't look like there's much on the horizon regarding some Native issues and bills and things like that." He kind of stopped and looked at me like, "Well, what the heck you mean there's not? There's a whole bunch of them, you know." And I guess if you look specifically for Indian or Native or Native American or Native Indian kind of bills, mm-hmm. nothing really comes up except for the early care and education and a dental, some sort of dental bill. But there are, like the one I mentioned before, the House Bill 1280, but there's other like water and water rights and waterfront property bills in the hopper, you know, and coming up and headed towards committees and things. So he said there's going to be plenty to do, and he's really been hopeful that this year we can get some people in those seats in those hearings, and get some people hopefully behind the microphones and testifying, whether we need to oppose or to support any certain bill, you know, that really makes a great difference to have our own people, our own relatives, you know, testifying on things that matter to us, you know, in its incubus stages, you know, instead of, like I said in the beginning of the conversation, you know, having to react to these different policies and laws that they pass. You know, this is a perfect opportunity. It's early in the legislative session to make an impression on these lawmakers that these laws and policies that they make have direct impact on our relatives that live on in near reservation boundaries. You know, these waters, these ancestral highways that they move the numbers around to fit corporate loopholes and such like that. We need to be there to put an end to this type of practices and these types of way of creating law. To be there firsthand and to hear it and to interject our opinion and give a personal testimony of the effect that it has when you jostle the fish consumption numbers, and you know, these fish can't get out past the Narrows Bridge, like Uncle Billy was saying. So it's that important that we show up, you know, and we can give a quick study and a quick overview of these bills that will be in committee hearings on that day, so people won't just be, you know, blindly going to whatever courtroom or whatever committee hearing it is. And so well, we're going to be prepared this year. We have some great speakers coming in to talk about some different things, and so we'll have plenty to do on this day. And so we're going to focus like a good 3 hours from 10 to 1 on making our presence known. You know, in the noontime we'll have the drum circle, and we'll be honoring the youth from the coast, from Kuliut, will be coming up, and so we want to take good care of them and listen and watch and learn from them too as well. And so it's going to be a good Friday, man. It's going to be a real good Friday, and we have relatives coming in from all across the state for the reorg meeting that we have over there at the Red Lion at 4 o'clock on that afternoon. So there'll be a lot of electeds that'll be showing up for this particular lobby day. So it's we're on our best behavior and working hard here to make it a successful lobby day.
All right, sounds great. And both events are amazing. And so, I know it was short notice. I appreciate everybody calling up and sharing with us. It's about 5:03. You're listening to KAOS 89.3 Olympia. We're here with Robert Steigham and Robert Upham. And I'll give you I want to talk a little bit more about if there's, you know how there's that saying, something's on your heart, you know, they'll follow you around till you say it. So I just give you a chance, both of you, to share a little bit more with our relatives if there's something that you would care to share at this moment. But I just think it's important what you said, Rob, about being there, American Indian Lobby Day this Friday. It's January 23rd, and it's I think you should come at 9, be ready, and it's a amazing time to be there, to be witness, because that's what I, for myself, when I go, I'm a witness to the people being still there, and it's really, I think it's really important to be present, to know what's going on in Indian country, and that we can really make a difference together. And February 14th, at the event up celebrating Black History Month, are weaving together at the Muckleshoot Pentecostal Church. We'll get more information from Robert Upham. And I appreciate you guys. You guys are really, you guys are in the front line doing work. You know, and getting us all, getting our. I don't know what to say. Just getting it going, yeah. And it's really appreciative.
I'm sure Bob would agree that. I think he and I have expressed that to one another at one time or another. That excuse me, my Seahawk voice is done. But we're the ones we've been waiting for, huh, Robert? Huh, Raven? We're the ones that we've been waiting for. We've been looking to our left and to our right and behind us, and you know, been surrounded by these people that have already given, you know, and still wanting to give, you know, the Hank Adamses and such. It's up to us, you know. We have a voice, you know. We have the capabilities. It's time to say something. But I wanted to run something by Robert and tell me if I'm wrong and point me in the right direction on this, Rob. I was thinking part of this lobby day is getting people down there in the seats and participating, getting down into the place where they talk about it, where they make the deals, Robert, you know, and you go down there to that big old building and you kind of get, whoa, you know, and asking these guys names on campaign signs, or here they are, and then we kind of, hey, look at this, and, you know, we get kind of mesmerized by the opulence and the distractions that are and the conversations and the whole ball of wax, you know. Hey, here's the governor. Hey, get my picture with the governor. And we kind of get distracted, and with all those feel-good moments, you know, hey, I got my picture with so-and-so. Hey, I got my, you know, mm-hmm. And it kind of goes back even with our relatives in D.C., you know, when they're, hey, I got my picture with the president. Hey, I got a picture with the Congress people. And and to me, it seems like when the non-Native relatives, the non-Native people can get just as excited or distracted or mesmerized by us Native people and feel that authority, you know, my president, you know, Brian Clasby of our Congress, you know, he's my president. And then when he goes... Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, hey, here's my picture with this president. It's still kind of condescending, like, it's a big deal to get our pictures with these presidents. And we know, hey, we got some pretty life, you know, life-threatening issues at hand, Keystone XL, so to speak. And, you know, hey, we need to be taken seriously, you know what I'm saying? We have, where's our credence and, you know, those types of things. And we need to get past, hey, I had my picture with, hey, I'm going to D.C., and we need to get guys that have the shirt sleeves rolled up and, hey, it's an honor to have, you know, for president to ask to get a picture with us. It, you know, we need to kind of level that playing field. Am I kind of right on that, Robert, do you think?
You are right, but also, like Tommy Smith or John Carlos and Tommy Smith did, they weren't afraid to make a stand to get kicked out of the Olympics. We can't be afraid to make a stand to get kicked out of Congress. We can't be sellouts, you know what I'm saying? John Carlos and Tommy Smith said it well, even though they won the gold, they said that gold medal can't feed my people, you know? So the paper that they write on to make these rules and regulations, that can't feed my people. it can't feed the spirit of my kids, it can't feed my people as far as money and taxes coming down. When it really comes down to it, if they have a law and they're expected to follow it, we know this from when John T. Williams was killed and the black gentleman was killed. They could have a law, but they're still superseded because the prosecuting attorney in these places, these people in power, find a way to subvert it and avoid it. We still end up losing. So we need to find a way where we put the right people in place so that they follow the law. Because so what you're doing is important, Robert Sataka, because if we don't put the people in place that will make the law work, we could have the vehicle, but they just won't drive it to the right place, you know?
Right. Right. You know, that's what with this House Bill 1280, Robert, that this is what I think they're choosing to be like one person from each tribe to form this commission, you know, and I was telling some folks there, you know, if we can get past nepotism, favoritism, and all the other isms in Indian country, this is a vehicle, this is a start where if you get the right people in the right place, you know, in the right position, you know, this is something that could really move things along for the relatives, you know what I'm saying? But if we keep, like you said, if somebody doesn't know how to drive behind that, you know, in that vehicle, it's not going to go anywhere. You know, the song remains the same.
And I think they expect that no one's going to know how to drive.
Right.
You know, and so we can just do what we want. But it goes back to what Robert said also, that if we're not taking care of our children and taking care of our people and we're not feeding them, we're all failing. And we have to do better. And
right.
We have to be there in order to make that bus, whatever it is, going in the right direction, you know, and our environment especially, because we are our environment. You can't separate us, and
right.
So we need to be there to be that voice and make sure that it is being driven the right way.
Right. Hmm. Yeah. Oh.
Yep.
So along that note, like the reason for this celebration of Black History is that there's been black words that have affected me. Black Dick Gregory, the black comedian that helped out with the fishing rights struggle on the Puyallup River and protesting in front of the Olympia, the state capitol, he said this. He said, it's kind of strange that at one time all the black people used to have gardens, and then in order to be middle class, you could eat out of a can. You get it? And he said, now all the black people are eating out of a can, and the 10 of the richer people are eating organic and eating out of the garden. See?
Yeah.
So he made an observation is when we try to get what they have, we miss what we left behind.
Wow, that's...
So our connection to our land and our tribal communities, we have something we need to start reassessing our strengths, our resources. We have something most people don't have, and then we need to tell them what it is. We need to quit using their value system. Ourselves.
Right, absolutely, and that system that we've been talking about that's in place, that you know, most people want to mirror that. We got to stop mirroring that. That's where we get from where the self-determination is being taken away, because if we keep mirroring it, we're gonna self-terminate ourselves, because that's what they want. So it's totally up to us to make sure that we bring these to the table, those values you're talking about, that, you know, traditional, to me, that traditional way of being with the earth and being with each other and, you know, bringing up the myths that have been put out there about Native people especially, mm-hmm. You know, that's, I think, very important. Remember Robert Williams Jr., he talked about it last week, about how it's important that people understand that we Native people still, we have all the same problems, all the same things here, and we need to deal with them. And we weren't lawless people, and we had restorative justice. We had all these things put in place that we've forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
And it's up to us to bring them back to the table.
Yeah, we didn't have the jails and the psych wards and the psych drugs and all that stuff.
Right, and it makes me wonder when you look at, like, there's more prisons out there than there are universities in America.
Yeah.
You know, and why is that? You know, like, really think about it, folks. Like, that's where they want us all. You know, that's an important thing to think about, I think. And,
well, you can be in prison in your own middle-class house with a white picket fence on it. There's your prison wall, the white picket fence, and the roads, and you avoid the things that mean the most to you. You know, even they leave their children behind.
Right. Right. Because again, it goes to that we're thinking not like we should be thinking, and we're chasing what another uncle told me, a fake dream, because he said when the people came, they came in search for the American dream, and the native people were already living the American dream, and that's where they kept fighting, and so it was always about the land. And he went into talking about that, like, we had the so-called American dream. I don't like to use the word American because we're older than that concept, but I got what he was saying. I truly got what he's saying, that the people that were living here already had that, and the people that were coming were chasing that, and they forgot, and so all these things have been mixed up, and here we are today, and we know that, for me, I'm going to speak for myself, that if we are going to survive as human beings, we're going to have to work together.
Yeah. So. There's no doubt.
Yep.
Amen. All right. There's only us, brother.
All righty. So I appreciate you both calling in tonight, and well, hopefully we can continue this at a later time. And again, thank you so much.
I appreciate the opportunity to mention it again, Brian. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I'm grateful that you're there, both of you, doing what you're doing, and we'll continue this talk hopefully soon.
Yeah, bring Robert on Travis Talk Radio here maybe Tuesday, huh, brother? Mm-hmm.
I'll
check you guys later.
All right, you guys take care. Thank you both for calling in.
Yeah.
All right, take care. And I want to thank our guest, Robert Satakam and Robert Upham, for calling in and sharing with us. Really appreciate both of those brothers and what they're doing for all the people all over. And I'm really grateful. And so we're going to continue with listening to the end of Mr. Dennis Banks.
Lay down in the face of struggle.